I couldn't give you any statistics. I haven't prepared any for this meeting. The instances, I would characterize Dick Benner's comments slightly differently. We often do try to discuss the life estate provisions with people. General reaction that we've had from people, is, particularly those that have gone through the process, is that I'm not aware of any instance where a life estate actually has been an option that has been accepted by people that have gone through the process. Now, I can't tell you why they haven't accepted it, except that there must be personal, financial, or legal reasons that are involved in their decisions. But we have been basically, through the hearings, through the process, we've been basically unsuccessful in getting any kind of acceptance. I would agree with Dick that I think the concept has a lot of merit. I'd like to see us have a greater degree of success than we have had with it, but to date, I'm not aware. I can't cite a single instance where, when we've gone through an actual application process, where a life estate has been an option that a party has chosen. I'd be more than willing to advertise it in the office to provide educational materials to the public, but it's just the material, to my knowledge, is not available, and I think it would be useful.
Representative Parkinson, then Representative Manloan.
Madam Chair, there might not even be anyone here that can answer my question, but the thing that was running around my head is the Oregon Home and Farm Loan Program. Now, if a veteran was trying to buy a farm that had a home on it and the farmer that wanted to sell it wanted a life estate, would that affect the loan? Would that make them not able to get it, or would it not affect it, or a bank? Does anybody know the answer?
We have some real estate people there, don't we?
And maybe they could answer it at a later time so that it wouldn't disturb the person.
That's a good question.
Representative Van Loan.
If I remember correctly, from committee, maybe you can answer it more accurately, but in many of those cases, I think they have to live on the farm.
Yes. I don't think they can get a veteran loan.
Name on
that. Oh, wait, I need you. Before I can't have you answer you from the back, I have to have you come up and give your name for the record.
I think I'd say more than that.
You may not be able to tell us more than that, but I still need you to for the record.
Debbie Weaver with the Oregon Association of Realtors. I think it's correct that you have to live on the farm to get the veterans loan, and I don't think it can be through a life estate. I think you actually have to be the one working the farm.
Madam Chair?
Representative Parkinson.
Same question with the commercial bank loan. It isn't a veterans loan. Would anybody know how that would affect the loan?
About a commercial loan? And are you talking about, I guess even when you're talking about the veterans loan and the commercial loan, Representative Parkinson, are you talking about if a person wants to buy the acreage to farm? That doesn't necessarily mean they have to, that they're buying a house, or does it? I mean, I don't know.
May I respond to that?
Yes,
It's very difficult to get a commercial loan for farming. Basically, what you're doing is you're borrowing on your personal credit ability. It has nothing to do with the farm. The only other farm loan that you might look at would be the Federal Land Bank loan. And they have in the past been known to make loans to people who basically were buying the farmland as an investment. But I don't think that they are doing that anymore. In fact, they're looking very, very closely at their loan, and they want the people living on the land that are actually farming it.
Representative Van Loan, and then Lois, and then Representative Currier, and then Proof.
I can partially answer that question because I know of a very close to me instance where they have the loan and they are not living on the land in the Federal Land Bank loan, and I think the same, it's individually worked out with the commercial loans. I mean, it depends on you and the equity you have and who's standing behind you.
Just a clarification.
May I go back to what I originally wanted to do?
May I have one more clarification to your statement? The only reason you can't with a veteran is because there's a provision in that veteran's loan requirement that you live in the property, whether it be an agriculture property or whether it be a homeowner property, but I don't think there's any provision, as Liz indicated, in that farm bank money, or certainly not in the commercial lending institution.
However, the board may require it. depending on the situation. May I go back to when Marvin Gloesch was testifying and Tom looked at me on life estates as if I hadn't correctly reported something?
I was looking for you to correctly report something.
Okay. What Mark Gloesch is referring to are those people who have come to them, to the Planning Commission, wanting a change. What I was referring to is individual sales that have been done in the community, and that's the way they have solved it. They've sold it with a life estate in the property, and I have several of those in my neighborhood right now. Quite often it's a neighboring farmer who has bought the property and given the life estate to the who was the person who was the owner.
Lois, did you have something else? She took care of it. Okay, Representative Van Leeuwen. Representative Prehearn?
Just a comment, Madam Chair. I don't know of any, and there may be one or two. I'll take it back. I do know of one. That's our local credit union. But very few of the commercial folks that are interested in loaning on what they classify as unimproved land, that is something that doesn't have a house and stuff on it.
Right.
So I would tend to think that while there's nothing legally that restricts them from doing that, they aren't real interested in loaning on farmland that isn't have a residence on it. And I know very few exceptions to that.
Representative Van Leeuwen is disagreeing with you, saying
she
knows
quite a bit.
But
no, I think they'll loan on personal credit.
Okay, on personal credit,
if the individual's good enough. But as far as loaning on the land is, as security, I don't think they're real enthused about it.
Yeah, I'll agree.
Madam Chair,
Representative Priestley.
Was there other provisions, to keep me clear on this, was there this situation of a hardship that was allowed? Maybe that could be reviewed, the various ways that this could be accommodated. Or
I think the question all came up on late last night when we were talking about lines on St. Line 9, 14 through 19, and trying to figure out what line 17, 18, and 19 meant.
No, what
page 9, line 17, 18, 19, what that meant and what that did.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hill.
I was reading this yesterday. I misunderstood the nature of the term unsuitable. In my reading, I believe it referred to unsuitability for the dwelling, where it actually refers to the unsuitability of the land for production. To clarify that, perhaps prevent future confusion, I'd like to insert after the word unsuitable on line 17, for production of farm crops and livestock, solely because of its size or location. And that would clarify that sentence a little bit. On line 17, after the word unsuitable, the underlined portion, insert the exact language that occurs two lines above, unsuitable for production of farm crops and livestock. That's a motion, Madam Chair.
There is a motion on the table before I can accept that, Representative Hill.
Or we can move to substitute or amend.
What is motion on the table?
The motion on the table, and I guess I know, I will do the motion, but what I'm going to do is figure out where that goes. Under this, since we don't have a homestead provision, Dick, can you come up maybe and help us or somebody? Since we don't currently have, my understanding is, a homestead provision, Representative Anderson's motion is to grandparent in the homestead provision. But we don't have one.
So,
is that correct?
I thought I thought I understood him to say grandfather in the homestead provisions and existing EFU ordinances. Is that
local ordinances? Okay. Okay. Representative Trayman.
Question, I guess. And was it this particular language in 17 through 19 that took out that possibility? They told us someplace that that with this bill, it would no longer be allowed unless we amend it. If we don't touch it, does it just stay in? What?
Beth? These non-farm dwellings, which is what the homestead provision in the local ordinance would allow, non-farm dwellings in here are allowed only on classes 4 through 8 soil, whereas under the local homestead provisions, they would be on any soil, which would include 1 through 3. So by virtue of enacting this, you cut out the local homestead provision on 1 through 3.
In an attempt to help, I think if you went into section sub 3 where you're talking about
section sub 3
215 213 sub 3, okay, which would be at the bottom of page 8 line 24, and just put in a disclaimer that says except as provided for homesteads in existing local ordinances in effect on the date of this act, you would have created the exception that would grandfather in what he's talking about.
Why should we grandfather in those existing ordinances and then not allow other counties to create them? Because the existing ordinances will allow homestead occurrence in the future, but other counties won't be able to have that occurrence. I think it'd be inequitable if we do that.
Ron.
If I might, Madam Chair, when the EFU task force went over this issue in the interim, it was felt that the existing commission policy, which really does not take a stand whether homestead partitions are good or bad. We simply have said that where you take a farm dwelling and you are partitioning and creating a new lot under the EFU statute, it's either got to be a farm partition or a non-farm partition. Since it's a non-farm partition for an existing dwelling, had to meet those criteria. And so we don't agree with Mr. Benner that it perverts the statute from that level. If I might suggest, I think what the committee needs to do is decide as a policy matter whether you think homestead partitions are good or bad, whether you want to allow them or not. If you decide you want to allow them, the EFU task force felt instead of doing it through and calling them non-farm dwellings and running them through that criteria, that you have a separate set of criteria for them. And you could do that by saying, notwithstanding here the prohibition of dwellings on 1 to 3 soil, you could allow homesteads on those soils, and there's a half dozen other alternatives. But it seems to me that you need to decide that issue first, whether you want to have homestead partitions or not, and then if you do, you can figure out what criteria, and if you don't, then you might want to prohibit them. I think there was an effort in the legislature several sessions ago to actually put enabling language in here to do it. We came in and said, well, you don't need it because they're happening now. If you don't like them, prohibit them. And the legislature didn't do that.
Madam Chair, I have a question. What about the language that would say nothing in this section shall prohibit local ordinances that provide for homestead exemptions?
That may or may not do it. The issue that Russ brought out was that if the existing practice of approving homestead partitions on the basis that they're non-farm, creating a non-farm dwelling, if that remains and you change the basis for establishing non-farm dwellings to prohibit it on 1 to 3 soils, then you wouldn't be able to have homestead partitions on 1 to 3 soils. So to solve that problem, you'd need to have language that would say that homestead partitions were okay on 1 to 3 soil. Obviously, if they're on 4 to 8 soil, it's not going to be a problem in the way they're now approved.
Follow. Sure. Just wanna, can a local government by ordinance prohibit homestead exemptions on 1 to 3?
Currently,
yes.
Representative Anderson, according to testimony you heard, it looks like at least 16 counties are already not allowing homestead that to occur. They don't have homestead provisions in their period.
Look, 16 do allow them, all the rest don't.
Okay.
20, right, Dick? At least 16 do allow homestead.
Okay, I apologize. 16 do allow. We've heard testimony that probably that amount or more don't allow them. We don't know. I don't know from all 36 counties, but Ron?
I would say those ordinances expressly have them. I would suggest that even if the ordinance expressly doesn't label a certain type of partition, a homestead partition, if someone with an existing farm comes in and cuts out the farm dwelling for 2 acres and keeps the remainder, and they apply the non-farm dwelling criteria, they are in effect doing a homestead partition, even if the ordinance doesn't expressly call it that.
Before we vote on this motion, I would just like one other thing to occur, and I don't know who is even best to do this, but it would be helpful if somebody would put on the board all of the different ways with the life estate, with a, if it's another farm member, through hardship cases, all of that, all the different ways you can get another dwelling on EFU land. Is someone prepared to do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Representative Hooley, Representative Anderson, I would just like to suggest that rather than getting into where you would put this in here and what language you would use, if you vote on the policy that you want, I'll do it.
Thank you. I was going to suggest that, Elizabeth, as I saw you coming and glued off your chair. While he's writing that, I think there's something we can take care of very quickly. Well, maybe.
Madam Chairman, I'm sitting here. I didn't know whether you were through with me or not.
Well, we're never quite through. You can move back, and we can always move back and forth here.
I appreciate the opportunity, and I want to say that Representative Parkinson brought out two real good points, I think, with the farmers shouldn't be treated any different than others on this building. We're having a special privilege to build in the area, and that the selling of land, if you get this provision to divide, subtracts from the ability of new people wanting to farm, to new farmers are coming in, if they have to compete with new houses and with the existing farmer that can buy a piece of land without also having to buy the house with it.
Representative Anderson, thank you, ma'am. Can I get you to withdraw your motion for just a minute and I'll accept it again? Can we take care of something on page 9 very quickly? Hopefully. On lines 12 and 13, we change major and measurably to the word substantial, substantial. Significant. Can we make that same change on line 27 and also on page 10 on line 17?
I think the motion originally covered all.
Originally covered all, but I think when I finally made that final motion, it only covered that, and I just want, if there are no objections, I can just doing that on those three places.
The word "or measurably" comes out.
So it's
significant.
Right. So it's just consistent all the way through. Any objection? Well, I just wanted to make sure that that was, and I thought you would do it that way, but.
Madam Chair, while we still have the blackboard, I keep hearing about the interim task force, and I would like to clarify at least in my own mind. That task force, I'm sure, was not a President of the Senate task force or a joint task force, the President of the Speaker of the House. This was a task force that was appointed by the Chairman of the Joint Interim Committee, and I think there's quite a difference between an ad hoc task force and a commonly named task force, and it was not necessarily an impartial task force.
how they ever. I'd ask how thorough was their analysis? How complete was the research?
Right in the eyes of who?
What committee are you talking about?
The Joint Interim Committee on Land Use appointed, the chair appointed a task force to look at this. Ron
Eber, DLCD. On the task force, there were representatives of the counties in terms of both the county council and county planning directors, representatives of the Farm Bureau, Dick Benner with Thousand Friends of Oregon, and myself for the department. And we discussed the issues dealing with exclusive farm use zoning, and we focused primarily on the issue of non-farm dwellings and those criteria, since that was the crux of the debate at the time. And I think there was extensive contacts amongst the different people on the task force to their constituent groups in going through the language and bringing it back to the Joint Legislative Committee.
Thank you. Ron, can I have you up here for just 1 minute, too? Marvin. What did I say?
Ron.
I'm sorry.
It's been a long week. Marvin, do you feel the new criteria for non-farm dwellings, using the word, using those two criteria, significant change or significant cost, will be more restrictive or less restrictive than the current language?
I think
more easier or less easier to work with.
Madam Chairman, Marvin Goetsch, the county planning directors. There's a subtle difference in this that Mr. McPherson and Mrs. Carnegie and myself had the opportunity to talk about on the way home last night, that I feel that there's going to be a greater burden on the farmer than there is under the present statute. I see the language in here as a county, when a case, an application comes to the county and the county has to make some kind of findings with regard to that, those findings that the county makes are based on the information that is submitted to it. If we have a situation coming up where a farmer does not object, chances are there would be nothing in the hearing record or any kind of record that would indicate that there may be any kind of a significant problem in that neighborhood. In other words, we largely have to rely through our notice provisions and the reactions that we get from the notice and from the hearing for people to object. Now, certainly those farmers who are astute enough to be very careful in terms of what's going on in their neighborhood will pick this up. And I would guess, and this is just strictly a shot in the dark, that probably in about 5 to 10% of the cases this will happen, just looking at our own record. In most instances where these questions come up, the farmers, the issue just never arises, and I think it really becomes the burden of the neighboring property owners to make the issue come, for the issue to arise.
You think these criteria?
So I think what we're going to find is that the burden is going to be more on the farmer than has been the case in the past, and I'm not sure that the farmers on the whole will recognize that.
You think that this is from a standpoint as administering these laws, will this be easier criteria for you to work with?
Overall, I think there's probably a slight improvement.
Rest assured, you can say this. Just wanted that. Are you through yet?
I think it's complete. If somebody in the audience recognizes the situation that's left out,
a hardship. Madam Chair,
did you copy that down to memory, or do you have a sheet you can pass it?
I have a statute.
Oh.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
when you asked Mr. Boge that question, you were just referring to this section. That was what he was answering, not on the whole.
Yeah. I was just asking on the new criteria. Okay.
Dick Benner from 1,000 Friends, what I've done is compared the existing statute with 1637. What there isn't room to do here is to show, to compare the criteria that would have to be satisfied in each situation. This is just the types of situations in which a dwelling can be authorized. You can get a first farm dwelling either way under existing law and under the 237. You can get an additional farm dwelling under either the existing law or 237, but you would have the burden of showing that the existing dwelling is in some way necessary for your operation. In other words, there's nothing in the statute that says you can only have one dwelling. You can have virtually an unlimited number of dwellings as long as you can show that they are necessary. In Rajneeshpuram, there are over 100 farm dwellings on that 67,000-acre ranch. So there's no limit in the statute on how many farm dwellings you can have. At some future session, perhaps that issue ought to be looked at. The relative's dwelling. This was added in 1981. It was called the Farmer Jones Amendment. And what it says is, well, let me just read it for you. You can have a dwelling on real property used for farm use if the dwelling is located on the same lot or parcel, as those terms are defined in 92, as the dwelling of the farm operator, and it's occupied by a relative whose assistance in the farm management is required by the operator.
Okay.
Either way, you can have...
Can I ask a question, Dick, on that? A new lot is not created.
That's right. It has to be on the same lot as the farm dwelling of the operator, and once that dwelling is located there, a new parcel can then not be created under that new relative dwelling.
And it would have to belong to the same person who owned the farm.
No. No, I mean, it most likely it would, because people are reluctant to buy houses when they don't have the real estate under them.
Madam Chair.
But it's not necessary. It would have to be a mobile home. No.
Madam Chair, I think you recognize that was what I call a mobile home lot.
No, I think that's
hard. Yes, it is, because how are you going to finance it if you can't refine it? You're only on your good name and credit if you bank can't refinance.
You can make a mortgage. You can create a mortgage lot.
Well, if you default, who's going to get it?
Goes to the bank.
And how are they going to sell it?
The law, in 1979, said that if that situation arises, that is, the person who builds the relative's dwelling can't make the payments, then that parcel becomes a non-farm parcel and can be sold to anyone. 1981 lot of record law.
Now wait a minute, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are, but...
Madam Chairman, I'm Brian Little. I represent the Umatilla County Planning Department. I work for them. And I'm familiar with Eastern Oregon, basically, and that creation of a mortgage lot is not acceptable to any banking institution in Eastern Oregon that I know of. And I know the law, and I've talked to several loan officers, and they will not use it. They want to have, they will require their lender or lendee to secure interest in a property. Secure interest usually means to obtain some type of fee, title on the property, so that some type of interest can be created in the property. And one of our biggest hassles has been the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. They require that before a DVA loan can be made. So although that is in the, what Mr. Benner is saying is correct, there's no lending institute that I know of in Eastern Oregon that will recognize that.
It would be interesting to hear from some Western Oregon bankers, because they lobbied for that provision in 1971.
Maybe we could get that. Carol, can you call the... Well, I know, but I'd like a banker to answer that question. Could you call...
John Scoot.
Call Frank Bonner or Don Ford, I was saying. Dave Barrows. Bob Elliott. Any one of those people. Like to know. They're the lobbyists. Call the lobby center. Okay, go ahead.
Under the 1981 lot of record law, there's a possibility of a dwelling in the EFU zone. There are changes made in 237 that would open that door a bit wider. 237 has an additional lot of record provision that would allow dwellings on parcels, existing parcels, 3 acres and under, if they can satisfy the non-interference test. Non-farm dwellings are allowed under existing law if the criteria are met, and you can have it a non-farm dwelling on class 1-8 soils. Under 237, you can have a non-farm dwelling if a different set of criteria are met on class 4-8 soil. The existing EFU statute does not authorize temporary hardship dwellings. 237, as you've amended it, would. And those are the, I think that's complete.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ann Lewis.
I don't know the law as well as he does, but I thought under temporary hardship there were the possibility currently.
In existing law? Well, the testimony, it's not allowed in existing law, but the testimony you heard is that some counties do it anyway.
Okay.